Welcome to Thundercast. Lindsay here. Great to have you along for Manchester Thunder's official podcast. Right, people, we're over halfway through the 2021 Netball Super League season, and here are the facts. Thunder have played 14 games so far. They're currently sitting in third place, having won 11 of them, getting the full matchday squad off the bench on a number of occasions and only dropping three games. One to Wasps Netball, and then both the home and away legs against Team Bath. Bath are looking slick this season, having only lost one game by one goal to Mavericks. But it's all to play for as the teams vie for that all-important top four finish before the semi-finals and grand final. So, what's it like inside the Super League as we head towards the business end of the season? I wanted to look at things from a few different angles, and I've got some brilliant guests that are going to help me do just that. The umpiring sensation that is Gary Burgess joins me later in the pod, taking you right down to the sideline. But first, I'm joined by three players, Thunder's uber-talented team captain and two of the 2021 training partners. Welcome to Thundercast, Emma Dovey.
Hi.
Alicia Scholes.
Hi.
And Millie Sanders. It's so nice to have you along, ladies. How are you doing?
Hi, good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Great to have all three of you with me, and I'm loving seeing the interior of your houses. Millie, looks like you're in a pretty plush bedroom there, actually. I'm not going to lie. It's sparkly.
Ooh. Yeah, no, it is a bit sparkly. Just sad. Sit back and relax.
Adding a bit of glam. And where are you, Alicia?
I'm in my mum's room. It looks pretty similar, to be honest.
It does. You've gone with the colour scheme there. And Emma, you are in your brand new house, which is looking very white.
It is very white. It has been whitewashed from top to bottom. I know last time I was on here, we were ripping wallpaper off. So, yeah, we're finally in now, 3 months later.
Well, it's looking good. This episode of Thundercast is sponsored by Manchester Met Uni. Thank you, as ever, for your support. Right, ladies, we're going to go for this because things are really ramping up now as we head towards the end of June. And one of the big changes in the last couple of weeks is that the Super League has moved from the centralised venue in Wakefield to London. We're at the Copper Box. How are you finding it at the Copper Box? Go on, Emma.
I think it's obviously a great venue. Obviously, for us, we prefer it up north. Anything up north is always better for us, whether it actually is or not. But I think obviously the travelling for us was a lot better up north, and I actually preferred the smaller venue. But obviously when we can get some fans back in the next few weeks, then I'm sure that'll change for the Copper Box.
Oh, fingers crossed for the fans, big time. At the end of last week's match, Karen Gregg mentioned stepping off the bus straight into a game. Alicia, that can't be very easy, just getting off the bus and then expecting your body to work. What was that like?
Yeah, to be honest, that was actually like a lot tougher than I thought, because I've never really had to travel that far. Or in the past, when you do travel, it's normally like a day before, but because of Corona and everything, it's all on the same day. So it's like tough to get going, but we do like a lot of activation and everything in the changing room. So yeah, we're all right.
Good. No doubt you will step up to the challenges. Have there been any other big changes, Millie? I've heard that you can now have your meals together as a group. You know, does that make a difference when you're part of a team?
Definitely. Like, it was quite isolated when you were back in your room and you got your food brought to you. And I'm quite like a social person. Like, I like being around people, chatting with people. So the fact that we can have like meals together, it's kind of like longing out, eating as slow as you can, you know, so you can spend as much time with your teammates and just having a bit of banter around the table as well, because it's a buffet as well. But you know, you can always go back for seconds and get one.
What's your best thing on the buffet?
They do nice toast, to be fair. They do some nice toast and crumpets. Now let's say salad, because we're on sport. Salad. They do some good lettuce.
It was a really tasty bit of lettuce that, oh, I just couldn't resist. And what about being out of lockdown for all three of you, you know, how are you balancing your sort of elite netball side of your life with the rest of your life? How's that going, Emma?
Yeah, I think it's difficult, because obviously at the minute, particularly when we're going to London, we've got double headers quite often, so our whole weekends are taken. But I think for me now, I've been back at work for a good couple of months, and I think I'm just waiting it out now until the end of the season to enjoy the lockdown easing. I'm getting old now. I can't go out anywhere near the game.
Hey, well, look, speaking of your age, happy birthday to you. Did you have a good 30th?
Yes, it was brilliant. Really nice. Couldn't really do very much. We were still in the middle of the restrictions then, but yeah, it was nice.
Well, look, 28th of June, the season will be over. You can have your 30th on that day. But it is brilliant to have you back in the team. Just tell us a little bit about your injury and about the rehab that you've done.
So I just rolled my ankle in the Bath game. Obviously went off for part of the first quarter, taped it up, came back on. It wasn't 100%, but it was okay. Played the next day against Wasps, still struggling a little bit. And then I got a scan during the week that week. And I just done a grade 3 tear on one of the ligaments in my ankle. So, yeah, it's been a hard few weeks, but I got back quite quickly, to be fair. And I think the break for the midpoint of the season came at a good time, so I could get back 2 weeks training under my belt before the first game.
Oh, it's brilliant to see you back. It really is. And I just winced then because I've had a grade 1 tear and you've had a grade 3, and that is a very different a killer fish. So it's brilliant to have you back. Just in terms of the intensity and injury that we've seen in the season, you know, Leeds Rhinos were allowed to bring in a player when they lost Wallam and Toner and Keenan all in a very short amount of time. Do you think that's a good thing? I don't think there was a huge amount of choice with that one, actually, because they lost three players and obviously there were lots of discussions. But is it all about the squad and the bench at this stage of the season?
Yeah, I think definitely. And I think that's one of our strengths. We've got a full squad of 15 that can go on that court. But I think, particularly with the double headers and the travelling, you don't realise how much it takes out of your body. So if you've got that 2 and 3 weekends on the bounce, you are obviously going to be more susceptible to injury. So it's trying to kind of rest people when you can, and also expose players that haven't had as much experience just whenever possible.
Absolutely, and we're definitely seeing a bit of that. Alicia, what's it like to have your captain back on the court? Does that make a difference?
When you was talking then, I was just thinking, do you know that Bath game last week when you came on and played a full game? Was that your first game back?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I don't know how you did that. Like, you just played like normal. I feel tired when I'm getting one quarter every now and then, so I don't know how you did that.
I'm not going to lie, I was dying in the first quarter. I turned to Kerry at one point and said, I'm absolutely dying. She was like, suck it up, Emma, suck it up.
No, you didn't look like you was dying at all. You like literally wouldn't have been able to tell you was out. You was well good.
It's interesting that you say that, Alicia, because haven't you just had your birthday as well? You're 20, so you're 10 years younger.
Yeah.
So you should be sprightly.
I know.
You came onto the court as centre for Dragons last weekend, but you've come out as wing attack earlier in the season. What was it like for you getting your first senior cap?
It feels like ages ago. Yeah, it was sick. It was like, obviously it was really exciting, but I think, I don't know, it just happens dead quick, doesn't it? Like, I would never like class myself as like a senior player, like playing for the first team. I just still feel like under 17s or whatever. Yeah, it was really good. It was exciting. I think it benefited me a lot that there was no crowds or anything, because I think I would have been really nervous, but because there was no one watching, it felt quite relaxed. And obviously all the girls were like really good with me, kept like speaking to me during the game, helping me, tell me what to do if I needed it. So yeah, I felt fine.
That's amazing. I wondered whether you might say the other way, actually. I wonder whether you might say, I missed having the fans behind me and all that noise, because we can hear everything that you guys are saying on the court. I commentate and I also watch as well. So we can hear the umpires, but we can hear you. And it is actually quite supportive, is it?
Yeah, well, I don't know any different, because I've never really played with a big crowd. So if there was a crowd, that'd be more of like a spook, because I'm not used to it. But just definitely feels a lot more less like intimidating, I think.
Interesting. So for Millie, you are yet to get your first senior cap with Thunder, but you've got loads of experience playing in under 21s. You're part of the England setup as well. You have been going to the games though, these doublers where Thunder are allowed to take the whole squad. What's it actually like in there? Because although there are no crowds, my goodness me, the bench is loud.
Well, if you think the bench is loud, I tell you what, you should hear me, Debbie and Millie. Little cheerleader squad we've got going on. We didn't have Emma on our team, but membership has expired and she's gone back on the court.
After the Bath game last weekend, I literally lost my voice until Thursday. I couldn't get it back.
No, same.
My quads were killing as well, because I was banging my feet. My quads were on fire. I was thinking, it's a good job I'm not come on, because my legs would be killing.
It sounds like cheerleading the squad is actually harder work than playing, Emma. So, you know, I don't know where you want to put yourself, really. It sounds busy.
To be fair, when I was on that balcony with Millie and Millie, it was hot. I felt more tired. It's like you put all your energy in.
Yeah, definitely. But we'd always have you back, Emma. Just know that.
I have been told, Millie, that you are the sort of chief cheerleader out there.
Yeah.
You know, one of the changes that we've seen this year, obviously, is that there's no fans. Also, that you can have a squad of 12 rather than 10. Now, does that give you more motivation, the younger players coming through? Because you sort of think, ah, there might be more space for me on a match day. Does it make you want to train harder, Alicia?
Definitely. And I think as well with that, even though there is a 12, it gets picked every week. Like, you're never guaranteed a space. So every week, it's like any of us could go. So in training, you're training knowing that, like, oh, like, they're watching me type of thing. I need to get in the squad for the weekend.
And I guess that's changed for you as well, Emma, because you're used to playing with that 10. Now you've got 12. There's a bit more flexibility.
Yeah, to be honest, it always used to be 12. It only changed to 10 a couple of years ago. But yeah, I just think particularly in some games, if you have got a big lead, you want to be able to bring on people and give them exposure. Well, if you've only got 10 players, you can't bring those members to a game. So they don't get a chance to actually get experience. So I think the people coming through the ranks and obviously the younger ones, it benefits them massively.
Yeah, and it's brilliant for us to watch as well. Right, ladies, let's get down to the nitty-gritty of this. So Karen Gregg's been trying different combos through the season. I've been watching and trying to think, what is she up to? And she says last week that she'd seen flashes of brilliance in the combinations, but there's always more to do. She's thinking about improvements that can be made. Emma, I'm going to put you on the spot here. We've not got many games left. What does that mean? When a coach says, you know, there's always room and we're going to make improvements, well, we need to see that in the next six games. What's going to happen?
Yeah, so I think individually we've obviously all been focusing on things. At training last night, we all had to say individually what we're going to do over the next 6 weeks to make sure that individually we're going to be at our best. And I just think as a squad, we're just going to be doing everything we can, taking the intensity into training and just trying to get that last push. Because obviously, like you said, we're currently third in the league, hoping to cement that spot in top four. And as you said earlier, we lost to Bath twice, but then last year, or 2018 now, I think it was, we lost to them twice in the season and then beat them in the semi-final. So I think it's all still to play for.
Come on, come on.
Millie, just cheering for that Bath win then.
I think I'll probably be able to hear you from my shoe cupboard where I record this podcast, Millie, by the sounds of it. Let's talk about Team Bath then, because obviously you brought it up there, Emma. You've lost to them twice this season already. We know it's doable. You had that really difficult doubleheader weekend where you lost to both Bath and Wasps. Bath, I think, was 25, the difference, but then the second game was much closer. You lost by just three. You want to hit those grand finals. You know, how are you going to deal with those big moments? And I'm going to ask all of you that. So as a fan, as a younger player, big moments, but first of all, the captain.
I think it's just kind of taking it as it comes. We obviously do our prep beforehand, so we've now done analysis on Bath twice. We'll do it a further time if we come against them again in the semis or the finals. But I think it's just having that confidence in the squad. Like I said, we've done it before and we've closed down the gap from 25 goal margin to a 3 goal margin. And there was areas in that game where there was critical moments that we didn't capitalise on. And I think we made some silly mistakes. So I think if we cut that out, then we can take the win.
Is that what you'll be saying to the girls then? Because I know when we've spoken before, you've always sort of said, go out there, enjoy the game. You're quite fun on court in those huddles. But do you have a different message this season?
No, I don't think so. We've all agreed this year that we play our best netball when we're enjoying ourselves. So I think it's also not putting too much pressure on yourself. And yes, you might be in a semi-final or a final situation, but at the end of the day, it's just a game and you're there to enjoy it. So we know that if we enjoy it, together as a team, that's when we're going to put out our best performance.
And in terms of pressure, there's something I wanted to ask you, Alicia. Is there more pressure for you particularly to succeed because of the success of your dad, who is Paul Scholes? Or do you feel that you've got support behind you with an elite sports person in your family already? Like, which side do you fall on?
No, I think it's definitely more pressure, especially because, like, everyone mentions it, do you know what I mean? No matter what I do, it's just going to be like rubbish compared to that, innit?
No, is the answer. It's not going to be rubbish compared to that. I think it's really different. And it's so interesting to hear you say that because you're a young player. But will you ask your dad for a bit of advice, you know, before you play these matches, which are getting more pressurised towards the end of the season?
I always, like, people do ask me this a lot, like, oh, like, I bet you ask him so many questions, but you speak to him loads, but he's just to do with, like, football, he's so quiet. Like, I've tried to ask him a million questions and he just don't, like, it's weird. It's like it's never happened. Like, I'll say to him, like, oh, what was your favourite game? What's your best moment? And he just don't reply. It's like he don't remember it happened. It's dead weird. Say if I'm nervous or something, he sends me good messages, but he's very, like, short, straight to the point, and he don't really go into much detail.
What about you? How do you prepare? Are you quiet or are you quite expressive?
I feel like I'm probably more quiet. I think, to be honest, I feel like I've been a lot different this season because it's like the first team and it's not my team. I feel like I've been quite different, but when it's like, say, when I was playing 21s and like I knew I'd play, I was much more quiet then. But now I feel like I talk more because I'm nervous. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you know, it's been brilliant to see you in the Super League this season, and we want more of it. Your speed is unbelievable. I play centre and I think, oh, yeah, wouldn't get anywhere near her. So it's really interesting to get a little bit inside your mind. Let's go into another mind, though, and that's the mind of Millie, because you'll be pushing as ever to try and make that starting seven, or certainly get into that squad. Yeah. You know, is that one of your aims for the end of the season, or are you just gleaning as much information as you can?
Well, this is kind of like my first season back, because obviously I was injured. So I've kind of taken the start of the season to get my confidence back and things like that, because I was quite nervous, as you would be. But I think as well, I've just like built relationships with the team. It's just like a great bunch of girls. You feel like everyone's daft, but I feel like on the away days and games, like everyone's daft, but then they're serious when they need to be. So they know when they need to be serious, and then you know when you can have a laugh. But yeah, obviously I really, really would like to have an experience playing on the first team. But, you know, I think when Karen thinks I'm ready, hopefully she'll pick me. But for now, I'm just trying as hard as I can in training and just picking things up that I can.
And shouting as loud as you can as well. Brilliant.
And
stuff.
Also that most important thing, shouting as loud as I can.
Absolutely. It's a big part. It's a big part of netball. Emma, though, in terms of the younger players and coming through in the bench, which I say we have talked and talked about this season, you know, Ellian McCormick, Ella Standring, Berry Neal, Lois Pearson, we're getting to know those names a little bit now, certainly in commentary and as a fan. Do you remember how it feels to be a younger player and then coming through? You know, where do you get that confidence from, and what do you do to help those younger players?
Yeah, I think for me, I had a bit of a different path to what most youngsters have. So I just went straight into Super League. There was no kind of youth pathway or anything like that. I just went straight in at 16, 17. And I'll always remember we played Bath. We used to lose every single game. And we played against Bath, and I remember playing against Pam Cookie, and Mike Greenwood took me off after the first quarter and just said, Emma, you were like a lamb to the slaughter. I'm going to take you off, otherwise your confidence will never, ever come back. And he took me off. But I think just having those experiences and understanding that you might not always go on there and be amazing, but it's about learning from that and what you can then change about your game to implement in the future.
Emma, did you say that you used to lose every game?
Yeah, when I first played, which was what, 13 years ago now. Yeah, I think we were right at the bottom.
Oh.
I would like to mention, by the way, that Emma, you're only 30. You know, it's not like 200 years ago, back in the dark ages, when netball was just coming through.
When you're on your 13th season, it feels like it.
you're still a young gun in my eyes. Well, look, good luck with those big moments. And netball really does give them to us. When the stakes are high, that's when I love watching the sport. But you've got to keep a cool head. And I caught up with a netball legend who knows this better than most. Well, he needs no introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway, because it's blooming impressive. He's umpired 11 Netball Super League finals, 3 World Cup finals, 2 Commonwealth Games finals, and 110 international netball matches. With a career spanning over 20 years, he's England Netball's head of officiating, and he was awarded his golden whistle after umpiring his 50th international match in 2013. Now look, if that isn't a jaw-dropping intro, I just don't know what is. It's the one and only Gary Burgess. Gary, can I call you Gary? Welcome to Thundercast.
Yeah, you can call me whatever you want this time.
Lovely, lovely, lovely to have you here. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm really excited about this interview. Now, You stepped away from netball in 2019. You tweeted that you weren't necessarily retiring, you were taking a break. Yet here you are in the 2021 season. What happened?
So I think for those of you who don't know, I left teaching in 2016 and carried on umpiring throughout. So there were a few bits and pieces that I needed to kind of sort out with league administration and things like that. And the 2019 season is the season after the World Cup. So it's when players normally take a year out to just regroup. And it just seems like such a good idea to just have the year off, get a few things sorted with work-life balance and work umpire balance as well. But the COVID pandemic put pay to that, and it actually turned out that I only missed three games or three rounds of games. So some would say it was a good time to break, some would say it was a waste of time, but it worked out well in the end.
Oh, well, look, it's super to have you back. I think one of the big questions for people when they sort of hear about you or they're getting to know you is, how did you get into netball in the first place? Because you're a male in a female sporting world.
Yeah, so I think that was exactly the reason why I got into it. You know, I started off working in schools in the early 2000s. And when we were going through all of that, we were told to get more experience in female sports to make yourself more employable as a PE teacher. I went on a course a long time ago. But Sheila Redpath, who many people will know as the grand dame of officiating at England Netball, she was the course tutor and inspired the fire inside me. I was a hockey umpire before, so there was a lot of transferable skills, but she inspired the fire inside me for officiating and basically said, you know, you could be really good at this and travel the world. I had aspirations to be an international player at something, but I just didn't have that innate skill. But netball umpiring itself is something that you absolutely can train at. So 9 years, well, it was 8 years actually, following that course, I found myself in the Cook Islands being awarded my international award. And Sheila and a lovely lady called Jan Burke were there in attendance to see it actually happen, which was great.
It's always interesting to hear about those people that open doors into what could be a possible career and your background there. I guess following on from that, is that male thing in a female world, have there been any barriers for you or stereotypes in terms of what you do?
No, I mean, I think, you know, everyone would love for there to be some controversy and some sexism and all of that sort of stuff. But actually, England Netball and the netball community have just welcomed me with open arms. And I think that's one of the reasons why we do have so many male umpires in netball. You know, I'm a strong believer in you can't be what you can't see. So role modeling is a great thing. So people see men umpiring netball, so they actually think that they can do it themselves. But yeah, I haven't ever experienced anything in that sense. I did have a couple of incidences back when I was teaching, and I turn up to a netball fixture with the girls, and you know, typical old-fashioned female PE teacher in her later career would often say, oh, a man, netball, do you even know what you're doing? And the girls would always just crack up. And I just said to them, let's leave it to the minibus girls. But yeah, just that. But yeah, it's been fantastic. England Netball continue to be fantastic. And the community itself is just, you know, welcomes anyone and everybody into it.
That's great to hear. And I hope she's watching your career now. In terms of male netball, particularly in the UK, because over in Australia, it is bigger. Do you think that's a growing sport?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think, you know, people are very quick to say, oh, there's no male involvement in netball. And I think they should be specific in that because, you know, there have been some fantastic male umpires, you know, and coaches, you know, even in the setup with your Thundercast, you know, Mike Greenwood paved the way for male coaches to be as fantastic as he was. So people need to be clear when they say there's no male involvement. They do mean players. But having said that, there is a massive movement going now. And it is great to see, you know, it just does raise the profile of the sport. And it just gets, you know, more, I think my boss says more net burners on court. I think she uses that a lot. But yeah, it just is great to see, you know, the netball as a sport being available to everybody now.
Oh, absolutely. I love playing mixed netball. I really like it. It's quite physical and I enjoy that. In terms of how you get good, though, at what you do as being an umpire, because at every level of netball, people have experiences with umpires that they can remember. You're getting to those big international games. How do you practice for that? Do you work with England Netball in their training sessions?
Yeah, so we all get opportunities to go into training sessions and experience, you know, high pressure. I think Tracy Neville called, I forget what she called it, world-class pressure or the pressure cooker, basically, where they simulate that environment. So we were invited into that, and it is a real high pressure situation. I remember the first time I went to an England session back in the day, Mark Caldo and Denise Egan were the coaches, and I was absolutely terrified. And I've got to know Denise really well after those things, and my impression couldn't be further from the truth. So it really is a high pressure situation. But again, the other thing that umpires can do, and certainly it's not just limited to elite umpires, is just look back at your performance. You know, everyone has got a really good high definition camera in their pocket, in their mobile phone. You know, as long as you check with everybody, it's okay to film. Just have a look back at, you know, your position and timing, how you move around the court. You know, it gets, as you get more experienced, it gets more in depth. And when you're at Super League level, we get every decision coded for us and go back through those to actually determine your success criteria and your decisions analysis and you know, your percentage success rate, really. But it's all about, you know, looking back on how to change things that went wrong, but not dwelling on them, to then put them right as you go back out on the court the next time.
Gosh, that's absolutely fascinating. And we do encourage people to get in touch with us on Thundercast at ThunderNetball or hashtag Thundercast. We'll see your question. And Mike got in touch. It's a bit cheeky, this one. He says, for those 50-50 calls, if you've realised you've made a mistake, do you go the other team's way next time? I feel like Mike has something he wants to confess there. But, you know, do you ever sort of think, oh, I might have got that wrong, I'm going to balance it out in the next decision?
No, I mean, absolutely not. I think, you know, I have always said that I'm as 100% confident in my incorrect decisions as I am in my correct ones, because both sets of decisions are made in a split second from all of the information that I had available at that time. So if it is wrong and it turns out to be wrong, after our useful, helpful people have pressed stop, start and rewind and watched it 100 times more than we had, you know, you just have to own that decision. And it's just as simple as something like a throw-in that was nearly 50-50, because I don't believe that anything in netball is it really ever 50-50. But a quick arm out, quick whistle or quick throw-in, you know, Manchester Thunder or whatever, you just have to sell that decision, because if you are a little bit indecisive, you only need a couple of them to convince players that you're not 100% sure in what you're doing. So quick, sharp and stick to the guns, you know.
Well, let's talk about the Super League then, because I would like to hear what it's like inside the 2021 season for you, because it's felt different to all of us. Some really positive stuff and some stuff that we really miss. But let's talk about one of the big talking points from round 12. And again, you tweeted about this, which was the use of the whistle and the penalty count, because in the Surrey Pulse game, Pulse gave away, I think it was 72 penalties and Storm 61, which included 7 cautions and a warning. Now, that's a lot. And there was a lot of chat about that particular game afterwards. You know, where do you stand on that? And is the game changing in terms of intensity and contact?
Well, I absolutely think the game is changing with regards to intensity. And I mean, I think we use this term physicality as a negative, but actually, I don't think it is. You only have to look at some of, you know, these athletes to see absolutely how conditioned and how, you know, informed they are. So they're getting stronger. You know, if you stood a netballer today next to, you know, a netballer from 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, they look completely different. So there is a real, you know, physicality change, which is positive. It's not contact. It is, you know, full-on contest, this sport. But I guess ultimately, you know, the job of the umpire is to, you know, blow their whistle when rules are infringed. If the rules aren't infringed, the umpire won't blow the whistle. So don't infringe the rules. The umpire's not involved in the game. The other part of the you know, the really important thing for umpires is that, you know, we will only escalate if we have to. And the umpire will give as much guidance and as much clear instruction of how to change behaviour. But the rule book states that the players are solely responsible for changing their behaviour. You know, their coaches will help them, their teammates will help them, the umpire will help them. But ultimately, if they don't change their behaviour, then the escalations come as a result of their actions, not the decisions of an umpire.
So what is then the relationship between the players and the umpire? Because I play at community level, I've played all my life, and, you know, there are moments when you raise your eyebrows or you sort of do more than that because you feel an umpire has made the wrong decision. What is that relationship? The infamous moment when you told Lola Guskov, don't use my first name, I used it at the top of the interview here. What is that? And can you walk away from it, you know?
I think the media make a lot more out of all of this stuff than it needs to be, because, you know, as a player, but also as a, you know, an NHS doctor, I have a huge amount of respect for Leila Guskov. You know, she's an outstanding athlete. She's an outstanding, you know, citizen. But at that moment in time, the minute we walk on court, there is an umpire player boundary there. You know, I have players that play Super League that I went to university with. I am friends with them. However, I liken it back to probably now 20 years ago. I used to teach my own brother science, and he would call me Mr. Burgess and I would call him Ryan, you know, and it's that sort of situation. I don't think that the lines are ever muddied, but there is a clear distinction between on court and off court, and, you know, conduct and misconduct. So, yeah, I know it did raise a smile for, I'm sure, people watching, but there was nothing negative intended. It's just keep right side of the line.
Do you know, I was watching it and I absolutely loved it. And my WhatsApp, my netball WhatsApp went bonkers because everyone, oh yeah, great, laying down the law. And you've got to, as you say, on court, that's the role and that's what you're doing. Very interesting indeed. What's it like being inside the centralised venue for 2021? Because one difference is no fans. We can hear every single thing that you're saying. How does that feel?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we are, as the profile of the sport is going to continue to raise, so are the umpires and their decisions, you know. And we're doing a lot of work behind the scenes to kind of support umpires and to prep umpires at how to deal with that pressure situation. But, you know I work for England Netball and I'll hold my hands up straight away. But the work that has been done by England Netball to get this league going on, the buy-in from all of the teams has just been absolutely outstanding. And the environment and the performance environment that it creates is as close to mirroring what I have experienced previously at a Commonwealth Games and a World Cup. You know, you're in a situation where there are multiple games on a day. You meet you might see your co-umpires for the first time for a long time. Whereas over a normal season, you barely bump into each other. So that kind of friendship and fraternity and that performance environment, I just think has been absolutely smashed out of the park, both at Wakefield and at the Copper Box as well. They're both absolutely outstanding.
Well, I work as a commentator, so I do the international games for the BBC and I do the Super League for Sky. And I have to say that I found that really disconcerting to begin with, because I'm used to a huge amount of noise within a netball venue. And that is part of my experience as a commentator. It helps me. As an umpire, is the dead silence or is it actually quite rowdy?
No, it's and this is the thing that, you know, it's obviously not as loud at the Copper Box as it is when there's 6,000 noisy spectators in there. I had the privilege of umpiring the world record attendance match in Australia in 2015, and there were 17,000 people in there, and that was loud. But they have a soundtrack that raises the level, but because there are no spectators, the benches must just be on some sort of amplifier because they are so loud. But again, like with everything, you know, the external kind of factors that affect an umpire, you know, you've got a really thick skin on the back of your body. Everything that's in front of you is important, nothing behind you. So you don't really, you know, need to worry too much about, you know, that sort of stuff. But it is different, but it is not as bad as we all thought it was going to be, because we thought it was going to be dead and quiet and everything like that. But actually, we're into it now. And I think it'll be quite a shock if we ever do get spectators in this season.
Yeah, it will. But I honestly think we'll go back to it really quickly. When we do, we'll just sort of go, oh, here they are again. There's the noise. Off we go. I certainly hope so anyway. In terms of hearing everything, though, and technology, do you think there's any space in netball for more sophisticated tech, things like VAR? I'm sure you've been asked this before. Is there a space for that in netball? You know, rugby now is quite dependent on technology.
It is. And that's the thing. It's dependent and it slows things up. I think the thing for me with netball is a lot faster than any of those other invasion games. So I don't think there is time. And I'll give you a scenario. The only time I would like to see it happen. I also think the skill of umpires as well in how they apply advantage, because in a lot of sports, if the advantage doesn't go very well, then it gets taken back and everything's restarted, both in hockey and rugby, etc. They do that. But in netball, when advantage works well, it can be the best spectacle that no one notices. So next time you're looking at a fantastic pass, just hear if there was an advantage before, because actually that's a contributory factor to that. We're not saying that, you know, they can't play without us and we can't play without them. We're all there to make the sport the spectacle it deserves to be. But that sort of stuff, I think, means that VAR is not really a thing. However, I will tell you this. I had this recurrent nightmare, and I've said this before, that I'm umpiring a big match, and just as the whistle goes, it's the point where the ball is the ball in or is the ball out, and then it ensues that I make the decision. It's the wrong decision for one team and the right decision for others, and they get the video, they rewind it, and they go crazy. So I think that's the only time that might be required. But yeah, again, you just got to make a decision, and rule 5.2.1 says the decision of the umpire is final and given without question.
Oh, I love that you know the number.
I only know that one.
That's fair enough. Do you sleep before a big game? You were talking there about really big games.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have any issue sleeping before. It's sleeping after, because you're on such a high and it's so, the endorphins are racing and the adrenaline's still pumping, that it's quite hard to sleep the night after a game. But yeah, not normally the night before.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I thought it would be the other way around, but very interesting indeed. Let's get some more questions in from our listeners. As an umpire, what advice would you give to players? And this is to do with what you were talking about in terms of settling down, the players getting to know how the umpire is going to manage that game. Again, we talk about it in commentary. Is that something to sort of get your head around really quickly?
Yeah, I think any good umpire will give, they'll set their stall out in the first 5 minutes. Now, if you've been doing as long as I have, that 5 minutes is just straight from the first whistle, because I've been doing it long enough and my umpiring is consistent enough that everybody knows what I accept. Now, I'm not going to say for a second that I think that it forms part of a team talk, but, you know, I'm sure the players look at the umpire list and see what they, you know, what these umpires will accept. You know, Gary will accept this, he won't accept that, he'll let you do this, he won't let you do that. But I think the advice for umpires as a whole is just, you know, make sure you set your stall out in the first 5 minutes so that the players know where your boundaries are, you know, and then you can then just disappear into the background. The best umpires are the ones that they don't remember. Now, unfortunately, when you look like I do and you have the haircut that I've got and my previous background in senior leadership in schools, you kind of have to tone a lot of that down because you deliberate, you know, by rights, you just stand out. So that's the kind of thing. So, you know, just those umpires that disappear into the background and that people don't remember, that's when you know you've had a good performance.
Absolutely. We name check at the top of the game so everyone knows who is looking after the match. But then I think you're right. You sort of don't want to be too known. You're very well known, though. Very well known for all those reasons you've just mentioned. Another question that I'm really interested in is, do you ever switch off? Do you go to other sporting matches and watch sport as an umpire, or are you able to be a fan? You know, do you ever sort of think, oh, bad decision there?
Well, I tell you, I can't watch netball as a spectator anymore. I always watch it as an umpire. So the best example I'll give you again is that umpires, if you're watching a game on TV, they will very rarely watch the person with the ball. An umpire will watch where the ball's going to. So that's why, and that happens in the game. So that's why sometimes when you're watching netball and the whistle goes, you think, well, there's nowhere near the ball. Oh, it's down there. So that's how I view that. But no, I'm still an avid spectator of other sports, rugby and football and hockey. But yeah, and I can kind of completely switch off from that. But netball is not something I find easy to watch.
I so admire what you do, and I mean that, because there is so much going on at any one time and off the ball as well. And we've seen this in the Australian and New Zealand leagues as well. There is some serious contact going on off the ball. What are you really hot on? What do you look for?
Well, I think that one of the things that I'm kind of, you know, I think was my trademark is just wide vision. It's I do this exercise when we're teaching new umpires, but basically it's just how wide your vision is. So, you know, you have on the edge of your width of vision, you have peripheral vision. You know, the middle bit that you look at is your focus vision, and then on the edge is your peripheral vision. And what I would always say is my peripheral vision is probably on the ball carrier, because you can see obvious stuff like contacts and footworks, all of that sort of stuff, obstructions. My focus visions is where the ball goes next, and link your eyes to your legs. If you get that right, you can see where the ball's going to go. You move to where the ball's going to go, and that's where you're always in the right place at the right time to make the right decisions, you know.
And what do you think, sort of going back to Australia and New Zealand that I mentioned there, what are your thoughts on the non-neutral umpiring from the Constellation Cup? You know, do you think netball might be moving that way?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, if it did, it's going against the grain of every other international sport. You know, that's the mainstay. And I think people do get wound up a little bit on, you know, oh, let's have the best umpires on the best matches. Well, there is no world ranking list of umpires. It's a perception that people have. And I certainly know throughout my career that, you know, we've had situations where umpires have not had great games when they've come to us, you know. So it is an interesting predicament. But I think ultimately, you know, COVID meant that it was impossible. I mean, myself, Kate Stevenson, umpired the Legends series because the South African umpires couldn't come over. We were due to go to South Africa and had been a couple of weeks before that. But I think whilst COVID's on, it's the right thing. But, you know, I just think netball spectators often can't be trusted to not go to bias the first thing something goes wrong. So I just think if you eradicate that, it's great. But one thing I will say is, you know, I love umpiring with my Australian and New Zealand colleagues. I mean, you know, I think umpiring with Michelle Phippard an Australian New Zealand game would be ideal. Same with John O'Bredin and Josh Bowring. You know, that would be great. But at the moment, you know, it's not going to happen, I don't think.
No, it's a different world, isn't it? And just getting netball on and happening is so key. This one from Caitlin Carter. What are your thoughts on the 2-point Suncorp Super Shot? She says the Australian Domestic League is essentially playing a different game at the moment. Do you think that that'll have an impact on the way that the Diamonds play when it comes to international games?
Well, I think I will say, look, you know, the other versions of netball, like Fastnet, Fast Five, and even the British Fast Five Championships that we had, those are the areas where, you know, these things can be tinkered with. You know, I am a strong believer in the traditional nature of netball and the fundamentals of that, you know, scoring from inside the circle, one goal and all of this sort of stuff. Whether or not it changes will change the way in which the Diamonds play, I don't know. I'll be the first person to say I'm not a coach and I would never comment on coaching things. I think from an umpiring point of view, you know, those last couple of minutes of each quarter, it does change the way you umpire. It absolutely does. And the evidence is there from Fast Five because, you know, you've got the same area, but you umpire it for the whole time. So you hold longer. You might penalise an infringement that you would normally play advantage on. Now, I'm not saying it would affect those Australian umpires that are using it because the Australian pool is incredibly good. But I'm all for instantaneous decision making, an autonomous response, you know, phase of, application of skill. We as umpires are on the autonomous phase because you can do it with your eyes closed. When you start tinkering with things like that, then it just leaves you with the potential for margin for error and issues to occur. And I wouldn't have that risk. And I've been clear when, talk has been around in Super League about what could happen next, what could we do next, that those sorts of things I would put a case against for, you know.
That is absolutely fascinating. There you go, Caitlin. What an answer. And I was going to ask you how long the decision is between whistle and advantage, but I guess you're sort of saying there that it's just part of who you are. It's so quick.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the decision to play advantage often comes fractionally before you would normally make a decision because you're looking down the court for the option. But, you know, on the actual skin of things, your advantage call replaces the time that you would blow the whistle. So no one ever wants to see an advantage call 2 seconds after the advantage has been given because that's just like a sneaky peek, you know, sneaky snatch.
Oh, it's so good to get inside your mind. It really is. I've got a few quick fire questions for you now. Short, snappy answers. Don't overthink it. Just have a little go. Right, here we are. What is your most memorable netball moment?
Probably falling over at the World Cup. That was pretty special. But no, they're just being funny. I think I was in the stadium when England won the gold medal on the Gold Coast. I think that's probably it.
Amazing. So question further down, how did it feel to you when England won that gold medal?
Oh, I was delighted. Absolutely delighted. I was sat next to one of my great mates, Jackie Mizen, and we just, you know, it's the first time I'd spectated a world final and long may it continue, you know.
Yeah, got to defend it next year now, big one. Are there any teams that make you nervous?
No.
Who's the scariest player you've ever come across? Is anyone particularly intimidating?
Not intimidating, negative, intimidating just because of who they were. The first time I umpired Liz Ellis, I was like the former Australian captain. Same with Irene van Dijk. These are proper netball celebrities. And, you know, I've grown to become really good friends with Irene. But yeah, Liz, when I first met Liz, that was terrifying.
Those are huge names. Interesting indeed. What is the best netball rule?
Advantage. It's the decision, it's the rule that can make the game a spectacle, or it can make a spectator up out of their chair or sat stuck in their chair.
You know it's coming. What's the worst netball rule?
Oh, not set. I think that's a thingy. But that's not actually a rule. That was an incorrect decision by me. But probably just the little ones that, foot up to the line and things like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's so pernickety. What's the hardest decision you've ever had to make as a netball umpire?
That's a good question. I don't think it's a hard decision. One of the biggest impact decisions is when I had to hold time when Casey Copwer did her patella tendon. And in Australia in 2015, she busted her patella tendon and having to hold time and then carry on afterwards. That was pretty hard work. To see an athlete of that stature just foot felled. And also, she'll shoot me for saying this, but Kat Tuivati had, Catherine Lartey had tears in her eyes, and seeing someone so strong as Kat, it was just, the whole thing was just a horrendous situation.
We've seen a bit of injury throughout the 2021 season as well, and you really feel those ties. So Sarah Bayman, in reaction to Hannah Joseph's injury, she had tears in her eyes, and you don't think as a spectator that people like umpires and coaches will be affected in that way.
No, absolutely. I've got that on Bayman. She always gives the ice queen feel, but she let us see into her heart a little bit there. So she, I'll pick her up on that next time I see her. I remember when Sasha Corbin did her ACL. That was literally within 30 centimetres of it. And, injuries, these players just work their hearts out, and to be felled by an injury, first round injuries, it's just awful because of the work that goes into it. It's awful to see.
It really is. A couple of final questions. This is from Paul. Do you have a favourite Gary? Who's your favourite Gary, Gary? Is it Gary Lineker? Is it Gary Barlow?
I dare say Gary Neville, do I?
Oh, well played. That's very well played. Good stuff. And if you could umpire another sport, what would it be?
Probably hockey. I think, there's a window to the Olympics in hockey and,
Yeah, superb game. And this is the big one, Gary. This is from Fiona Tate, and it's pretty deep. We're talking scones. She's seen on your Twitter page that you've done cream, then jam, and jam, then cream. She just feels like you're sitting on the fence with this one, and she wants you to make a decision.
Do you know, I'm going to put it right out there and say, actually, I prefer it without jam at all and just clotted cream.
Goodness, what are you doing?
I know, it's bad, isn't it?
That's huge. There you go, Fiona. Question answered, but it isn't the answer we all wanted. It's a bit off the track. Lovely stuff. Thank you so much. It's been just wonderful to talk to you. What are you excited about for the rest of the season? Because it's really gearing up now.
Well, absolutely. I think the top 5-6 places, they're all getting really pinched at the moment. So we're in for some really good tight games. But we all aspire, umpires aspire to get on the semi-finals. Your performance during the season and your seasonal average score that you get will get you on the semi-finals, but then it was all down to your performance on that one game as to whether or not you get on the final or not. So it hots up for umpires as well as the teams. So we're all competing against each other as well.
Well, we will be watching you and the sport with our eagle eye. Thank you so much for joining me on Thundercast. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Great. Nice to talk to you too. Thank you.
That is the bombshell that Gary Burgess left me with. I didn't know what to do with myself. We're talking scones. It's clearly the cream first and the jam second so that you don't make a mess of your knife. Yes? Millie, you're shaking your head.
No. I think I'm going to, next time Gary's umpiring my game, I'm going to have to pull in for a little chat because that's just wrong.
Just cream. That's terrifying.
No, butter. Put a bit of butter. Just butter.
Just butter. That's not a thing.
I tell you what, a bit of Lurpak. Oh,
I love a bit of Lurpak on a scone.
Hey, never
knows. But I'll also take jam and cream.
And I love that, this is a very serious podcast about the Netball Super League, and here we are, a good 5 minutes on scones. But seriously, it's cream then jam. And what's it like to be umpired by Gary Burgess? Because, I did mention the little Leila Guskov moment where he said, don't use my first name. We all enjoyed that. Is he, is the creme de la creme? Oh, my goodness. What a great link that was. Go on, Emma.
To be honest, we just kind of in a nice way, try to ignore the umpires in a game. You've got to adapt to what they do, but we don't try and bring them into the game as much as possible and try not to overthink umpiring styles and just take each game as it comes.
I thought it'd be well scary me, but before the game the other day, I was showing him my nails and he like told me to put them back. He was like, put them back so I can't see you. I'm thinking, oh my God, all the other ones ate me.
It's an expose. This is absolutely brilliant. And do you have a favourite umpire, Millie? Because I play a lot of community netball and when I turn up, my first thing that I do is look at the umpires and think, what kind of night am I going to have?
I do actually. But you know what? I can't think of a name. We even have each other on Facebook. And Sarah Drake. That's it. Sarah Drake. I love your umpiring.
Well, look, you need to be tweeting this podcast out afterwards. Send it to her. Now, confession time. Be honest. Have any of you ever had a bit of a go? Have you ever done the eye roll? Have you ever been called over for a little word with the umpire? Be honest.
Yeah.
Oh, Millie, go on.
Just a few times, really. It's nothing like... Like, I'm quite a smiley person because I'm a goalkeeper and I fly out, you know, sometimes I do accidentally go into people. And some umpires seem to think that it's intentional, but it's genuinely not. So they just have a quiet word with me. I give them a smile, you know, yeah, I get you, sweeten them up and we go with them.
Yeah, I think you get frustrated in a game and sometimes you maybe do say or eye roll, probably pick that up from Keza along the years. Obviously, it's not personal against the umpires. It's more frustration at yourself.
Absolutely. Well said, you. And moving swiftly on. Amazingly, we are reaching the final whistle, which is the part of the pod where we discuss something that the netball world is chatting about that we haven't covered in the pod so far. And I know what you're thinking, dear listener. You're thinking, she's going to talk about this week's big announcement about the athletes chosen to be part of the England Roses full-time programme. Massive, massive congratulations to Ellie Cardwell and Laura Malcolm on their selection and to Amy Carter, who's made the Roses Futures programme as well. But no, I'm not actually going to talk about that. You know, perhaps it's the new coaching lineup at England Netball, including Liana Liotta. Oh my goodness, I'm so excited about that. Or the fact that the Suncor Super Netball has started again and we can watch some ex-Thunder favourites on court down under. But no, it's not that either. It's bigger than any of those things. Ladies, what I want to know is, how did you feel about the end of Line of Duty?
Oh, I'm going to say, I didn't watch it.
Don't watch it.
I didn't watch it.
None of us watched it.
That's hilarious. So I have been watching all of the Thunder social media and it's like, oh, Line of Duty, it's big. None of you care.
I'm happy talking about Leo to me. I didn't know she was an England coach.
Forget Line of Duty. Go back one.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. She joined the coaching team. Yeah, what do you think about that then?
That's unreal, that, for wing attacks, isn't it?
Yeah. Why are you interested in that? What do you love about her game? Forget Line of Duty. It's over.
Like my first season training with the first team, she was there. And yeah, she's just mad, isn't she? Well, fast. I made someone take a picture of me and her at the end of training one time. She must have thought, what the hell's going on here? I'm at training and this girl having a picture of me, a little weirdo.
I remember when Jodie Gibson signed for Tameside and I played a game with her and I asked for a picture at the end. She must have thought, this kid. I always do that. I remember when I saw Serena Guthrie and I fell over in front of her.
Billy, I remember you asking me. I was coaching Millie and we used to get pictures together. Millie Sanders, I used to coach you at camp with Karen and Tracy.
Emma asked her a picture of me, that's what it was.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, definitely. She's got it on her white wall behind. You just can't see it at the moment. I'm interested, actually, who is your netball role model, each of you? Let's start with Alicia, because she sort of went off on one there, which I very much enjoyed.
My netball role model, Leota, Laura Langman.
Oh, yeah.
And Guthrie. Oh, and Jay Clark. I wrote a letter to Jay Clark in year six.
That's so lovely.
When this podcast gets posted, I'm tagging her.
I've never told her that because I think she'd probably just laugh in my face.
She's going to know now.
It's going out. What about Emily? Who's yours?
Emma, if you had one guess, who would it be?
Oh, Helen Housby.
Your goalkeeper, though.
Yeah, but she's just sick.
Come on then, Emma, who's your role model?
Jeeva Mentor. Oh. I think any defender, she's going to be their role model, isn't she?
Emma, I was joking, you're my role model.
There we go. But seriously though, ladies, you know, the vibe in the camp and the relationship between the players is really important at this stage of things. And Millie, I really want to come back to you on this one, because I know you are such a big cheerleader. We've heard more about it in the pod, and you get everyone revved up before the games. With no fans, that is actually really important. So can you just tell me a little bit about what you say to the team before they hit the floor?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll let you all into a little secret. So first thing I like to do is get everyone a bit excited. So you know that everywhere we go. So we start that off a bit quiet on the bus. And then as we get on, it gets louder and louder. Everyone's banging on tables. Everyone's, you know, banging the feet. Coach to the front, we're loving it, right? So then we get off, walk out straight face, intimidate everyone on the live. And then when we get into the room, I like to maybe do a little TikTok or do a little dance for everyone. Liz always likes it. She stands on the bench and makes us all line up in front of her and sets her own phone up and videos herself, like, cheering us all on at the front. Obviously, we'll have the team talk, Karen, everyone will be serious, ready to go. And then just before we leave the change room, I'll do it everywhere we go, really loud, get everyone really pumped up. And then I go to the balcony and watch my teammates win.
Oh my goodness me, the bus journey down to London must just now be epic, because you're only going to Wakefield before and now you got all the way to and from London. But I think, you know, we're coming towards the end of the season and we really want to know, Thunder, we want to get inside, and this pod has been brilliant for that. Can you give us any goss? Obviously you're the cheerleader, Millie. Do we have any other roles within the team? You know, who's the mum? Who's the joker? Give me the goss.
She's everything. Millie's everything. No one else gets a word in.
Lindsay, I'm everything and more.
I can feel it from here. I can feel it. Right. Goodness me. Well, I'm getting an absolute insight and it is brilliant. Do you girls have a message you like to give to the fans? Because obviously it is really hard for us. We're not able to come and watch and we miss that energy that you clearly bring to the games. You know, what would you say to the fans these last few games as we head towards the end of the season?
We're going to win the final.
That, and also 2 days before our game, I'd like them to talk a little bit less, rest the vocal cords, and then on the game, just give it everything you've got. Scream, shout, do me proud.
I feel like maybe you should lead a coaching session in how to, never mind how to be fit to play netball, but how to be a proper fan. That's definitely coming from you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Last word to you then, Emma, as team captain.
Well, I think hopefully from the bank holiday weekend at the end of May, we might be able to have some fans in the copper box. So obviously we want to get as many Thunder fans down there as possible to join Millie, because then they might drown Millie's voice out a little bit.
And how are you feeling ahead of the weekend? Because there's a double header for you this weekend. Is it Wasps and Mavs? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're feeling okay. Good. We had a hard training session last night. I think everybody just about survived. But yeah, I think it'll take us into this weekend with good stead.
Well, look, best of luck. Thank you so, so much for joining me on Thundercast. It's been brilliant to get inside the team with all of you. Do get in touch, as ever, I always say, with your thoughts and your suggestions and your pictures. I'm at Lindsay_Chapman on Instagram. No, that's on Twitter. And I'm Lindsay Chapman Presenter on Instagram. I wish they could be the same, but they're not. How frustrating. Also, hashtag Thundercast and at ThunderNetball if you want to get in touch. This episode of Thundercast is brought to you today in association with MMU. Thank you so, so much for listening. Bye for now.